In August 1972, a teenage girl vanished after leaving her home in Springfield, New Jersey, USA. The discovery of her decomposed remains 6 weeks later would lead to decades of speculation as to how she died, along with rumors of witchcraft and devil worship. 50 years on, the cause of her death remains unsolved and has become the stuff of urban legend. Was the girl a victim of ritual sacrifice, a serial killer, or a drugs overdose? Or did she take her own life? You decide. This is what happens when unsupported rumour becomes fact. This is the mysterious case of Jeanette De Palma. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Well, I am covering one that is a mysterious case from back in the day, but still has ramifications in a modern time, because essentially people are still begging the question, what happened to Jeanette De Palma? Hopefully, after I have gone through today's case, you may have a better idea indeed. Let's go back to September 1972. There's a woman who's residing at the Baltusrol Gardens apartment complex. This is in the Springfield Township, which is in New Jersey. Well, basically, this particular resident very narrowly avoids getting a horrendously nasty surprise. So her dog had been out and doing what dogs do, roaming around the nearby woods, having a sniff around. And we know what happens when dogs are walking either with their owners or by themselves. Those noses, those incredibly powerful noses that can smell anything, which does beg the question why dogs have such terrible taste in what they eat. With respect. But nonetheless, we all know that dogs are very responsible for turning up bodies. They genuinely are. We hear about it time and time again in news reports that a dog walker has discovered a body. And in this case, the dog had been out by itself. And when it returned, it basically dropped something on the lawn before it gets caught inside by its owner. So this is unbeknown to the owner at the time, what it has recovered from the woods. Now, shortly after, the apartment's elderly superintendent, they spot what seems to be a really large bone near the bushes. So they go over to inspect it, and she is absolutely and understandably horrified by what she discovers, because immediately she can see it's the badly decomposed human left forearm and hand. And she knew immediately, because she could see the nails were painted with a pale varnish. So automatically she knew she was dealing with a female body. She alerts the police straight away, and they're there really, really quickly. They start searching the surrounding woods. They have a bloodhound with them because obviously they're incredible at locating particular scents. The police immediately begin to join the dots because a teenager has gone missing in the local area. So Jeanette De Palma had been listed as a runaway 6 weeks earlier. Guys, you know how I feel about the old, oh, she's a runaway. I don't get it. I really don't. And I say that now as I would say it then, because we can look back and say, ah, well, it was a different time, it was a different place, it was a different space. These expectations of teenagers to go on the hippie trail, etc., were very common. But actually, no. That doesn't make sense at all. When somebody disappears, particularly when a family know that that is completely out of character and not within habitual behaviour, it rings alarm bells that are serious and should be taken seriously. And I cover cases constantly where a girl or a boy has been considered a runaway with absolutely no prior behaviour indicating that would be the possibility in case. And yet that's what happens. And the problem with that is no one's investigating it. So this means that somebody who just vanishes into thin air is listed as someone that isn't suspicious regarding their disappearance. And that means that no one is looking aside from the family. Can't even imagine how the family would be feeling. I have children, the idea of one of my children going missing, knowing that they would never do that on any level, without a shadow of a doubt, without informing me where they were going. I would know that something sinister had occurred. But this is what's happened with Jeanette De Palma. She's been listed as a runaway 6 weeks earlier, and now the police are thinking, okay, hang on. This body's turned up. there is a likelihood that this could actually be the missing girl. Now, it didn't take them long to find the rest of the body. So on the 19th of September 1972, they actually locate it on a high cliff. So it's basically above an abandoned crystal and gravel quarry, and that was located behind the apartment complex. So when they look for the body, they find it in stages. So first the right upper arm, and then nearby they find the rest of the remains, which is fully clothed. She was wearing tan pants, navy blue shirt. They noted that her feet were bare, and one of the problems was that animals had basically eaten all of her flesh, virtually, which is hugely problematic for anybody who's trying to figure out how somebody has died. And all the bodily flesh had been virtually eaten, and also the same had happened around the flesh on her head. Immediately, they were able to tell that the body was a female. And this is really where the rumours begin to spread, because there is this rumour going around that the arrangement of the actual scene was unusual. So the way that the body, as far as people are starting to discuss, had been posed was something that caused a level of suspicion and concern. It didn't seem to be an individual who'd just been found, who'd sadly passed away and then been ravaged by animals after death. And there were also allegedly eyewitness accounts of logs and branches that had been placed around the body, and also a rock formation that had been placed around the head that was allegedly in a particular shape. So people start to say, oh, well, this looks like she's been killed in a planned way. So this isn't something that has been a fatality because she suddenly died. There is a reasoning behind why she's died, how she's been laid out, and the meaning behind her death potentially. Also, one of the things that was noted was there was an eerie quietness at the scene. Now, again, that's a direct quote from the anecdotal evidence from the particular investigation and the scene itself. What I would say is it's high up where no one goes. At the end of the day, you don't tend to see loads of animals in the day around those kind of spots. So an eerie quietness when a body is found would be relatively common, because it's eerie to find a body, and unless there are people around, it's going to be quiet. Sorry, just going to throw that in, because I think when people start using descriptors like eerie quietness, it seems mysterious and scary and otherworldly, but actually it's just a common reality of a body being found in a completely isolated spot. But flames of these rumours, they would basically be fanned heavily by the fact that the body was found in the part of a quarry known locally as Devil's Teeth. So automatically, we have this link with a name that is clearly to do with Satanism. So the investigators have got a pretty big job to do. First of all, they don't know how this person has died. And secondly, at that moment in time when they discover the body, even though they suspect it's Jeanette De Palma, with respect, she's so badly decomposed and has been savaged and ravaged by animals that they can't identify her by looking. So they need to get dental records. And indeed, the dental records do confirm that the remains were absolutely those of missing 16-year-old Jeanette De Palma. Classically, again, not the runaway, the victim. And even though, as you'll tell, this is a complex case throughout, I'm going to refer to her as the victim. I do not believe that she died naturally under any circumstances, and I'm frustrated that we're talking yet again, even though this is years and decades earlier, about a case of a young girl who went missing, whose family knew that she wouldn't go missing, that nobody wanted to look for because the police were quite happy to suggest that she'd just left of her own volition. So Jeanette vanished on the 7th of August 1972, that's 6 weeks earlier from when her body was discovered. She left her home in Springfield, New Jersey, and she was basically going to her friends. She said to her mother that she was going to take a train, but like a lot of teenagers, potentially she fabricated this. So the belief is that she decided that she wasn't going to take the train, she was going to hitchhike her way there instead. This was so common at the time. Hitchhiking was common, I think, until recent years. You don't see it as often now, but I used to pick hitchhikers up all the time. And when I travelled extensively, and I did travel extensively for a good few years, I had a camper van in New Zealand, I had a camper van in Australia, and I picked people up every single day of the week. And I look back now with a sense of horror at my confidence and overconfidence when it came down to those decisions, but it was just part of my experience doing an OE, going overseas and living that lifestyle and wanting to make an impact on other people's lives when they were traveling. So hitchhiking now, because of social media and also because we know a lot more about the true crime world, it makes you think again about that kind of behavior. But in the 70s, this was just commonplace. In fact, think about so many of the serial killers that we talk about, like Ed Kemper, for example. These are individuals who knew that people trusted hitchhiking and they used that to their advantage. So she basically, they allege, hitchhiked. And she was only 16 at the time. She only turned 16 4 days before she disappeared. But of course, she never arrives at the destination that she told her mother she was going. So her parents are immediately concerned, immediately terrified. They report her missing the next day. But like I said, that classic belief of investigators, oh, well, she's gone of her own volition. We'll see what happens. I can't imagine the horror that that family had to endure. They know that their girl is gone. She's a kid. They know that she's not the kind of girl who would just disappear. And yet, for whatever reason, they have to just acknowledge and accept that investigators are going to consider this an open missing persons case. For 6 weeks, there was absolutely no sign from her. There was no contact from her. It was completely out of character for Jeanette. And for anybody who has kids, or even when you look back at your own behavior, it doesn't matter how selfish you are as a kid. And believe me, when I was a teenager, I was definitely in the top 1% of selfishness because I felt that my needs were like super important and my parents were so old fashioned. And at the end of the day, if I wanted to stay out and if I wanted to party and if I wanted to do all these things that I wanted to do, then I should be able to do them. And I definitely gave them some grey hairs. But even for somebody like me who was pretty rebellious and pretty independent, I would absolutely have been calling my parents and saying where I was. I would never have been so malicious and so unfair to have just avoided contact and left them in the chaos and fear of those feelings. And Jeanette's family know. There's no way that she would have done that to them. She wasn't the kind of teenage runaway that people talk about. She was a really happy girl. She came from a really large, middle upper class Italian family. She's one of five daughters of Salvatore and Florence De Palma. She also had three brothers. She was deeply religious according to her family. In fact, the whole family were devout Christians and she and her parents attended a local Pentecostal church. In fact, she was even known to speak to her friends about the dangers of sin. So she'd have conversations with her peers about the issues regarding people deciding to worship the devil. And she just tried to engage with her friends on a level where that she was a mentor as well as being a mate. She wasn't the partying type. And according to her family, she was someone who really felt the inclination and drive to lead others to Jesus. She was very much involved in a local community. She got involved in working to help people who were addicted to drugs. And she actually had a future plan to go and attend a Bible college. So, you know, she was very motivated by morals without a doubt. And her family had this gorgeous house. It was on Clearview Road. And when I looked up that area at the time, that was an area that virtually had no crime whatsoever. So if you're trying to look at an idyllic childhood and an idyllic family with a really good foundation and moral compass, we're talking about this family. And people don't just go missing. And if they do go missing, they tend to turn up really, really quickly. But weeks pass and there's no trace of Jeanette until a dog basically brings home her limb. Now, once the police start to speak to the family, because obviously they're dealing now with a very suspicious death, and they speak to her friends as well, they're looking for leads. You know, what on earth could have befallen this poor girl? But There were lots of varying and conflicting accounts, and the problem with that is that that does nothing essentially to progress the investigation. And then to add to the problems regarding the investigation, it's the sensational media reports that really cause issues, because those sensational media reports, they basically begin to dominate public opinion on the case. And that's the problem. It's a problem when people start to decide that a case, a death, a murder, etc., has played out in a particular way, because it dissuades the public from thinking logically to some degree about certain elements of the case. It stops people thinking about people that they might have seen who would normally be suspicious, but because you're thinking about something far more dark and sinister in the way it's been presented, you maybe cast those thoughts to the side. And that bias is something that starts being problematic when it comes down to trying to solve this case. So investigators at this moment in time are trying to rely on the autopsy. They really want to get a definitive as to how this girl has died, and also how that's going to help them to crack the case. But it's almost impossible. The pathologist provides really few answers. The remains are just in such an advanced state of decomposition that the autopsy couldn't even be performed. Now, that's a huge problem. And bear in mind, this is at a time where the autopsy is so integral to the case, because we're talking about the 70s. Forensics just aren't in the position that they are today. So when you can't even assess how somebody's died, that's hugely problematic per se. Now, obviously, the police understand that there's a distinct possibility that Jeanette's been murdered. But because of the problematic state of the body, there's no evidence of blunt force trauma, they can't find gunshot injuries, and they can't find any skeletal evidence that suggests that stabbings occurred. So ultimately, the thing that the pathologist can't rule out, because he can rule out all those other things, is a possible cause of death that's strangulation. Now, there was no physical evidence of strangulation surviving on the body itself, so they didn't see any bruising to the neck. There wasn't a fracture of the hyobone, broken blood vessels in the eyes, because the body wasn't in a state where you could see that stuff. But the fact that she had died in such weird circumstances, that drew the investigators' attention to the suggestion that this was an unnatural death. One of the theories was there was a possibility she'd fallen prey to a serial killer. Jeanette, actually, when you look at the profiles of victims of serial killers, she actually has a relatively common victim profile, particularly when we're looking at lust and domination killers. So she was an attractive female teenager, she was traveling alone, and that gives her a vulnerability and availability. And we know that serial killers in particular, that's what they're looking for in their victims. And on top of that, she was highly desirable just because physically she was a desirable individual. Now, 2 years after her body was found, the bodies of 17-year-old Mary Ann Pryor and 16-year-old Lorraine Kelly. Just for those of you in the UK, Lorraine Kelly. We're not talking about the morning television presenter, but those two bodies were found dumped in the woodland in New Jersey. So there's 17-year-old and 16-year-old. So again, automatically that draws you in to the fact that, wow, we're looking at a potential individual with a signature who goes for young girls. Certainly when we're looking at this case, she fits the demographic. And the fact that the bodies have been dumped in woodland in New Jersey, that's again a denominator that kind of makes you go, ooh, that seems like there could be a connection. And both of those poor girls, they've been abducted, they've been raped, and they've been drowned. Now, their killer, they were able to identify, and that turned out to be the torso killer, Richard Cottingham. Actually, it took nearly 50 years before he confessed to those killings. And during the interrogation of that particular killer, he admitted that where those two girls were concerned, he held them for 3 days. He did awful things. He subjected them to repeated rapes, and then he killed them. When you look at the fact that Mary and Lorraine were the same age as Jeanette, bodies found in woodland in New Jersey, then you can't help thinking, there are certain some commonalities and features that make you consider him as a potential killer. And then there's another finger of suspicion. This is a homeless man. So he was known as Red, and he was known to be living in the woods close by to the quarry, and allegedly he'd fled his campsite following the discovery of Jeanette's remains. Just gonna throw it out there. There could be a perfectly reasonable explanation for somebody who's homeless living in the woods deciding to flee the area when the local press are suggesting there are satanic killers in that specific area. I don't know about you, but I just imagine that I'm somebody without an abode and I'm happily going about my business, got my little campsite, eating my food that I managed to forage, quite happy, thinking to myself, it's a nice life in this free environment where I control the world around me because I have no bills to pay. And then I find out that there is a potential killer loose, or killers who are satanic looking for potential victims. I would imagine packing up very quickly, potentially moving to a more urban area. So I don't think you can just throw it out there that this guy who just disappears from the area is then going to be a killer. And actually, they soon dismiss him as a suspect. And like I said, I think it makes perfect sense if somebody's suggesting that there are serial killers or there are potential satanic killers around. It's not going to make you feel like your neighbourhood is the best place to be. Now, as well as being a potential homicide victim, they also felt that Jeanette might have been a victim of sexual assault. So there was apparently staining to items of her clothing. So this included her underwear. But the problem again we are faced with is that any testable traces of blood or semen had basically long since been destroyed because of the decomposition. These days it would be very different, wouldn't it? We're so advanced in our technology, but this is back in 1972. So this is prior to forensic DNA analysis that actually began a decade later to when this death played out. So they really are firing blanks everywhere they turn. The other possibility, because they're looking at all theories at this moment in time, is that Jeanette had possibly overdosed on drugs. So one of the rumours that was going around, and if you know about this case, this has been a rumour that has certainly festered, I would say, over the years. It was that she'd been found at a spot where local youths like to party. And so some people speculated that she'd been with others, she'd been having a good time, maybe too much of a good time, and she'd OD'd. And then because the young people had been scared of that reality, they had fled the scene essentially and left her to die. Again, I understand that. I will have it noted though that as much as people can give young people who take recreational drugs a bad name, most young people are pro-social enough, particularly from an area that was very pro-social and very low crime. It's unusual that they would just abandon her. I mean, I fully appreciate they might not have wanted to get into trouble if she'd OD'd, but equally, it would be possible to let emergency services know what had happened and bring help to the scene without actually showing who you are. So again, I'm not convinced about the fact that she had somehow overdosed. Apparently, according to her friends as well, they said it just wasn't within her mindset. She wasn't known for partying. She certainly wasn't known for drugs. Apparently, she'd only ever smoked the occasional joint. And the other thing that was clearly defining of it being a very tenuous link to a drug death is there was literally no drugs paraphernalia found near the body. Also, when they did tests on her remains, there were no drugs detected in her system. So a drug overdose, therefore, seems really unlikely. Now, there was one thing that was apparently detected in her remains that was a little bit unusual, and that was a high level of lead. The pathologist couldn't actually account for the presence of this, so they couldn't explain it. They just knew it was there. And again, this does little to nothing when it comes down to reducing the fears and the speculation in the local community, because this revelation of the lead just fuels this speculation that Jeanette's met this really unnatural and sinister end. And some people started to say, well, you know who uses lead? Witches use lead. So basically they start suggesting that she has fallen victim to being used in some kind of ritualistic killing. And Some people who were interviewed, they actually said, look, Jeanette was actually wilder than her family claimed, and that her parents were the ones who made her go to church. But I'm just going to put it out there. Like, literally, Jeanette's parents basically thought she was Mother Teresa. Anybody would be wilder than that. You know, the reality is Jeanette was obviously very moral, very engaged in her local community, very pro-social, but also was a teenager. So she's going to fall short of her parents' perfect expectations. Wilder, I don't think we can put her in the category of wilder. She did drugs outreach work with people who are dependent. She preached to her friends about the Bible. She's hardly a wild child. In fact, if you take the example of any of us as teenagers and then imagine our parents giving some kind of testimony to our behavior versus our friends, I mean, can you imagine that? Our friends know us at both the best and the worst, in the highs and the lows, including when we lay on the floor flat out, usually struggling to remember who we are. Was that just me? Possibly that was just me. But you know what I'm saying? This girl was not wild. Yes, she would have been wilder than her family claimed, because we don't show that side of who we are to our parents on the whole. So then these rumors start really spreading. And in fact, one of them is that unknown to her parents, she'd fallen in with this group who practiced Satanism. Again, this is unsubstantiated, but rumours are great, aren't they? You know it. We've all been there, particularly when you're younger. A rumour starts and you're like, I've had nothing to do with that. I'm not involved in this. Even though it's about me, that's absolute BS. But for some reason, 3 months later, that's become kind of a fact. And the urban legend is you really did do those things. That's how these things spread and change truth. And when it comes down to this girl, the fact that people are now considering that she's strayed from the Christian path, then she's actually practicing Satanism, it's highly disrespectful and very distressing for the family. Because like I said, people love that kind of connection with the macabre, malevolent and darkness of these kind of practices. But we're talking about the death of a girl who just hit 16 years of age, who died most likely in a horrendous way, and people are actually casting aspersions on her character. Now, as they continue to investigate this case, which is really frustrating for the investigators because clearly they're struggling to figure out how on earth it happened, they actually send samples of Jeanette's clothing to the FBI because they want to further test it, and they do microscopic and chemical analysis, but they find no apparent foreign hairs on them, so that turns up a blank. So the investigators then have to conclude that there's no definitive evidence that she's been murdered. So then it ends up getting classed as a suspicious death rather than a homicide. And even though we can all connect with the fact that the investigators certainly, from what I can understand, genuinely believe that she had met her fate through murder, they can't cast iron state that that's the fact. But whatever fate Jeanette had suffered, she'd clearly been left in a quarry to rot, which is horrifying. There's no respect, is there? And again, that's indicative of a death that's unnatural and, in my opinion, violent. These rumours get worse. So it's not long before it becomes this talk of a ritualistic killing. So it's said that the branches and the logs at the scene, they were found arranged in this particular way around her body, and they alleged that it was a coffin shape. Others claimed, no, it wasn't a coffin shape, it's more like a pentagram. So you can see how these stories, like Chinese whispers, are growing and spreading. And furthermore, it's said that there are several unusual objects found scattered around her body. And this is within the actual space that people are alleging was formed by the coffin stroke pentagram shaped boundary. So they said there were small crosses made of twigs. Also, there were apparently arrows carved into the trees directing the way to the body, and also animal carcasses that were apparently hanging in the trees, some in jars. And some people then, with all this information that's coming out, they start believing that she'd been deliberately targeted by Satanists because she had these amazing religious beliefs, because she was such a pro-social, loving, compassionately religious girl. So she's the perfect target. And this speculation that actually gets very loudly voiced by local Reverend James Tate. So he was the pastor at Jeanette's church. So he claimed that her preaching had roused the Satanist fanaticism and they basically killed her. And you can imagine, can't you? If you're in that congregation, bear in mind, I'm just going to throw it out there. It's just my assumption. This is me saying what I think. But I used to go to church quite a lot when I was bringing my kids up when they were little. I used to like the scones, I'm not going to lie, after the service. But basically, I would go, and Simon, who was my preacher for many years, when he shared his sermon and gave us the advice and guidance that he was giving that week, I didn't sit there thinking, Simon is a little bit dramatic. I thought, Simon, man of the cloth, if you're watching, Simon, that's what I think of you. Nice guy, man of the cloth. Basically, I believed him. If he was saying, mate, there's some serious satanic worshippers and they're going about ritualistically killing people locally, I'd have been like, my God. The only reason that this man is saying it is because he cares about us, he cares about his congregation, he cares about keeping us safe, and I would be believing him. So this kind of fuel is being poured onto the fire by somebody of standing and meaning. People are going to be panicking without a shadow of a doubt. And these speculations, they further get cemented into the public conscience when the media pick up on it. Of course they do. So then there's these sensational reports of the case, rife with allegations of satanic sacrifices, occult rituals, all adding into the macabre allure surrounding Jeanette's mysterious death. Because if you were writing a script of a film and you were looking for the ideal human sacrifice, you would choose a character just like her, religious, pure, pro-social, compassionate. She would be the absolute opposite of the kind of individuals you would imagine who would want to sacrifice that kind of human. So even though we're talking about sadly real life, you can see how it plays in to the media hype, the media storm. And the headlines, they included things like murder probe sheds light on witchcraft cult. Bear in mind, they don't have any evidence of a witchcraft cult. I'm not even sure witchcraft cults exist. I'm pretty sure it's a witchcraft coven. Cults tend to be slightly different. For example, there wouldn't be more than one leader, whereas witches tend to have an equal role in that area. Sorry, I digress. I don't think we need a description of that. But the point is, on a definition level, I don't think it's appropriate. But again, not only is it witchcraft, it's a witchcraft cult. There's a whole cult of them. And this sets people's minds on fire, doesn't it? It's also reported that officers who were involved in the investigation were allegedly investigating whether Jeanette's death was linked to a group of Satanists or possibly a coven of witches. As I said, coven, not cult where witches are concerned. But apparently they were meant to be living in the vast Watchung Reservation. Now, to be fair, there was a group of modern pagans who actually practiced nature-related rituals in the reservation. And that in itself was something that people started to decide was a descriptor for these individuals that the press are pointing at. Even though clearly we're talking about a completely different belief system. And lots of pagans exist today. They aren't going around ritually killing Christians. But the point is, this is what the press are putting out. And because there are, shall we say, some elements of truth, if you stretch the truth very, very, very far to the point where it's almost not true, people can hook it on there. And at this point, people are like, pagans. So when you step away from being a Satanist who kills babies, that's the way that their minds are working. Now, around the time of Jeanette's death, the police allegedly found in the reservation burning candles, a bowl of blood and feathers, and pigeons with their necks snapped. Allegedly. But again, if you're reading this in the paper, for the most part, especially back in the 70s, you don't question its reality. You buy into it verbatim as fact. These days, we understand that the media makes stuff up 99% of the time because all they want is clicks into their paper and make you read that article and ideally buy the barbecue that's also advertised in the article itself. At the end of the day, we get it. We're more awake to that. But in the 70s, you just would have trusted it fully, much like you would have trusted the news fully. So this is something that really for the local community must have been absolutely psychologically destroying. If I had been living there at this moment in time with kids in that area, looking at my local community and thinking, oh my God, nobody is safe. These individuals are lurking in the shadows. And they literally want to kill people of Christian standing, that would be horrifying. Now, the case has got so many problems that we're talking about years passing and the case just remaining unsolved. Jeanette's death becomes the stuff of urban legends, the stuff that's shared around campfires, stories that are told, different spins placed on it, becoming more and more extreme regarding how she met her end. Locally, it seemed to be accepted that the teenager had basically fallen victim to ritual sacrifice. And many people were that scared of even broaching the subject, even discussing it, because they felt that if they discussed it, it was something that could mean that they'd opened a door to the potential and possibility of them finding themselves dealing with some malevolent force. And we have to remember, this is a decade before the dawn of what I would consider the 80s satanic panic. But now it's embedded in their local community that Jeanette De Palma was indeed ritually sacrificed. Also, there's a growing talk of a police cover-up. So one of the allegations that's made towards the police is that basically the area itself had a really good reputation before Jeanette Palmer's death. And the locals are saying, listen, you have covered this up. And actually it starts to become more of a wider philosophy and belief that the police didn't want the town's reputation tarnished. They didn't want talk and revelations of witches and Satanists. They just wanted everybody to be quiet and acknowledge that this area is somewhere that none of this could ever occur. And that apparently adds the fuel to the fire because people feel that they're trying to sink the story and the reality of what's played out in this murder as far as they're concerned, because the locals genuinely believe it's a murder. Now, over a quarter of a century after Jeanette's death, 25 years, imagine having no answers as a parent when your child has died in such horrible ways. Because even though you might not have a definitive answer as to how she met her death, you're going to suspect it was a horrible one. And you're gonna suspect that she was killed by other hands. You're not gonna imagine that she OD'd. You're not gonna imagine that she just died suddenly. Why was she there? She had no reason to be there. You're gonna live with that pain day in, day out. We get to this quarter of a century afterwards, and authorities claim that all the files and evidence, all of them, ever relating to the case, had been destroyed in the flooding caused by Hurricane Floyd, which is in 1999. Bear in mind, if you want to damage the possibility of people ever coming to terms with the fact that the investigation had been thorough and that it wasn't to do with Satanism, you're gonna want transparency, aren't you? When the police suddenly say, oh, hang on, you're never gonna find out, you're never gonna be able to look at this cold case, you're never gonna be able to look at the prior investigation and what happened because you know what, it all got destroyed. It's a bit like the dog ate my homework, teacher. No one believes it. But this apparently occurs and the police put this information out. And at this point, the talk of satanic sacrifices and occult rituals just continue to exacerbate. Because, of course, why did the police want nobody to know about the investigation? What are they hiding? Because it could have been destroyed in the hurricane, or it could be that the police don't want new eyes looking at the case. However, the thing about these stories that just won't go away is that people like me and others, people like you, we have a thirst for knowledge and justice, and we don't like not having closure. And because of that, people start to look into cases that don't make a lot of sense, cases that have stood the test of time, cases where rumour remains rife and questions remain evident. So 4 decades after the mystery began, evidence comes to light that finally helps to separate myth from fact. And it's recent. So in 2015, Jesse P. Pollock and Mark Moran, they release a book on the case. It's called Death on the Devil's Teeth, The Strange Murder That Shocked Suburban New Jersey. So Moran, whilst he was the editor of Weird NJ magazine, he'd been sent lots of letters, which apparently gave exclusive details about Jeanette's death. So then he subsequently teams up with Pollock and they decide to investigate the case and to write the book. However, they claim that they really did meet resistance from the police during their research. So they had that suggestion repeated that all of the information relating to the case, all the evidence, all been destroyed. But these guys are undeterred, really undeterred. They're like a bloodhound, they're searching for the answers and they're not gonna give them up. So basically they want these answers and they go to great lengths to get them. So the authors managed to get their hands on a case file in 2019. So basically did a Freedom of Information request. And it turns out, surprise, surprise. Sorry, that was a really bad example of Cilla Black. Many of you won't know who that is. Surprise, surprise. She did a show called Surprise, Surprise. Sorry, I have no idea why Cilla Black came in to my head in that moment. I deeply apologise. But anyway, it turns out that all of this evidence that had been destroyed in the flooding hadn't. No. Apparently, the hurricane hadn't wiped out the evidence at all. In fact, the file contained photographs and a police sketch of the place Jeanette's remains were found. Now, the remains themselves had actually been compassionately blacked out, but you could see that the body was on its stomach, the head was facing right, and the right arm was over a large fallen tree limb. So they're literally looking at the scene. And this is where they can dispute a lot of those rumours. So first off, her body wasn't found in a spot frequented by partying teenagers. You remember the, oh, she OD'd and they all ran away? Yeah, that wouldn't have happened. The area itself was way more overgrown with plants and bushes. So that basically rules out the theory that she'd gone there with others and just overdosed. And another thing they look at is this eyewitness report who'd been involved in the search. This person had said, quote, two pieces of wood were crossed on the ground over her head. More wood framed the body like a coffin. Now, in truth, when they're looking at the pictures, the alleged coffin shape was just actually more like an open rectangle. Now, considering the body was actually found in woods, there were fallen branches everywhere, and those branches had formed all manner of shapes. Also, there were rocks, sticks, and logs, and they appear naturally placed. So they look like they've been there for some time, so long before Jeanette's body ever arrived there. So when people had said they were placed with purpose around her head, it doesn't make sense, because clearly Jeanette had arrived after they had been in situ. And crucially, you remember that whole thing about, oh, there were arrows carved into the trees pointing to the body? No, there weren't. There weren't at all. There were no little crosses around her body, around the trees, and there were certainly no dead animal carcasses either. And most definitely and crucially, there was no sacrificial altar. These are all things that had started to be discussed. At the end of the day, none of it was evident. Now, the items nearby that they saw that were close to her body, they included her flip-flops. So there was one near her foot, one near her head. And also it appeared that the contents of Jeanette's purse that had been tipped out in a pile near her body. But these items as well, they're really sad to see because they're just indicative of exactly what you'd expect to see in a girl of Jeanette's age's purse. You know, the things that she was carrying, it's so synonymous with being a teenager. So she had a Vicks inhaler, She had this small green compact. She got lipstick. She got eyeshadow. She got a blue comb. All the things that you want to take with you when you're going somewhere because you want to keep yourself looking nice. Now, there was one, what you would say, unusual object found amongst those belongings. So a small vial, and it contained an unknown substance. However, what I would say is it turned out to resemble a coricidin bottle. Now, a coricidin bottle, coricidin itself is an antihistamine, and that helps with colds. And Jeanette's mum actually confirmed that her daughter had had a slight cold at the time she vanished. It's probably also why she had the Vicks with her. But the purse itself and her necklace, which she always wore, they'd been stolen. Now, I don't know about you, but straight away, that makes me completely discount any possibility of ritualistic killing, Satanism and witchcraft cults. But it does draw me into the reality of the type of character of an individual who likes to take mementos, a girl's purse, a girl's necklace. That is certainly something that really is resonating with me in this moment. So even though a lot of people had wanted to hold on to this idea, this had been an organized killing with a reason behind it being that she's this pure Christian spirit, it is so far left field of what we would genuinely consider when looking at somebody's body turning up. You know, it is very unusual for all of those myths to be attached to this kind of a murder. I'm gonna say murder because without a shadow of a doubt, I believe that she was murdered. There is actually a philosophy, it's a principle in philosophy, known as Occam's razor. Now, if I'm gonna massively oversimplify this particular term, it basically states that the simplest explanation is most likely the correct. So in this case, I can't help feeling that the rumor and the speculation over time became fact, even though clearly there is no basis for that to become fact. So if today, let's say, the remains of a teenage girl were found in woodland with her belongings scattered nearby, we would, because of our research and knowledge and understanding of these kind of crimes playing out, we would probably guess at a sex-orientated murder and robbery. The fact that Jeanette's body was found in a place known locally as Devil's Teeth, well, it feels like that's where this whole myth begins, this perfect setting for a ritual killing. You know, even the dog bringing a human arm home was immediately morbidly captivating. It's one of those things that is so out of the ordinary. There were talks of logs, branches, twigs around the body. That all fuels those further rumours. And the fact that people started to say it was a coffin-like shape or a pentagram shape, replete with sticks, crosses, animal carcasses. You know, in the end, the scene in the public awareness, it wasn't the same as that captured in the photographic evidence. The conscience of everybody walking around carrying what they believe were the images of that girl's body just were not in line with the reality of what had been captured. So in the mind's eye, all those people started to believe it was this satanic sacrifice on an altar that didn't play out in evidence at all. Now, in my opinion, and this is an unsolved case, so I can only give my opinion, there's an absolutely simpler explanation to Jeanette's death. It's far more mundane, but it is no less tragic. I believe that Jeanette was hitchhiking. I believe that when she was hitchhiking, she was vulnerable, she was available, and she was desirable, and she was spotted by her killer. It was most probably 99.9%, I would say, a man. It was likely a violent sex offender or even a serial killer. I think that she was either taken into the woods, possibly sexually assaulted, then robbed and strangled, or she was killed elsewhere and then her body was actually dumped there in a place where ideally it wouldn't be found for some time. And indeed, you know, we have to acknowledge that was something that played out in reality because it was a dog that actually found her remains. It wasn't a human being. And it had been enough time so that her body was in an advanced state of decomposition. Now, the officer who was in the search party that actually found Jeanette's body, he even stated that it was really difficult to get up there, climbing up to the spot that her body had been left in situ. It was challenging, but Jeanette had been wearing flip-flops. So why would she have gone there of her own volition and her own choice? She's either been carried up there or forced up there, as far as I'm concerned. And there are sadly countless examples of young women and girls meeting this kind of a fate. Whereas in contrast, when you consider ritualistic satanic killings, they are actually incredibly rare. Now, the authorities have made it very clear that as far as they're concerned, one of the biggest problems in this case is being the portrayal by the media. They feel that really hasn't helped the investigation. So this constant talk of a satanic element to the death, it just created hysteria, created fear, and it was totally unsupported by the facts and evidence. But it did nothing to actually progress the case. Because as I said, it gives this huge bias. People think that they're dealing with an otherworldly kind of killing, and that means they aren't concentrating on the actual reality of what could have happened, i.e. she was grabbed by somebody and then horribly murdered. People weren't even thinking in that context because, like I said, they're thinking about it in this whole other dimensional way. And that conclusion of the public meant that they came to this erroneous conclusion, full stop. And that means that they potentially stopped people with valuable information even coming forward. Many people in the town, including police, right to this day, still feel afraid to discuss it. They have this belief because it's become so embedded in their urban myth within their community culture that there is this unholy connection. And I kind of understand it. You know, I do salute a magpie for absolutely no good reason. I don't walk under ladders and I've never put an umbrella up indoors. And yet I know it's all BS. But nonetheless, we kind of have these little rituals that make us feel safe, right? And I guess because it's become so embedded in local culture that people just don't want to chance it by even talking about the reality of what might have happened to this girl. But even though some of these investigators don't want to even talk about it today, suggesting that there's some kind of link with the satanic, I just don't buy into it because from the original investigators looking at that crime scene, looking at the photos, it would be incredulous that any investigator could conclude there was evidence of occult practices. Unless, of course, they were going to the church where the preacher had decided to convince the entire world that the police were hiding everything and that there was a coven cult, witchcraft group, whatever, marauding the area, stealing young virgins. Because with respect, if you are religious and you're going to that church where he's preaching that, it's going to be compelling. Just going to say it, when you're a leader, be careful about the kind of things that you say. Another thing that I think would have been really problematic in this case is that the police claimed that the file and evidence had been destroyed when it hadn't. I mean, if you've got nothing to hide, why on earth aren't you being transparent? And if I find out you're not being transparent, I'm going to believe that you got something to hide. So we get to 2021, so very, very recently, and now we go back to serial killer Richard Cottingham. So he sends written statements to Pollock, and apparently, at this point, he suggests that he could have abducted and killed Jeanette while she was hitchhiking. So Cottingham is an individual who admitted that he'd been obsessed with bondage since a child. He fantasized hugely about hurting girls, and he claimed that this had always been a problem for him. He'd always had a problem with women. He actually made his victims call him master before he killed them. Now, his preferred MO was strangulation. That's the only cause of death that wasn't ruled out in Jeanette's case. And 11 murders have actually conclusively been linked to Cottingham. So he's 100% a serial killer and 100% an individual whose MO we know. Now, he actually claims that he killed between 80 to 100 girls. And if we were to imagine that she fell victim to him, well, he's saying that 80 to 100 is the number he's killed, but he's only been linked to 11. That would suggest a high number of those individuals have never been found, meaning that maybe he knows how to dispose of a body and not actually have that body be discovered. Let's think about Jeanette and where she was placed. It was in an area that people didn't visit. If the dog had never been there, would she ever have been discovered? We don't know. There's certainly a level of sophistication to the disposal of a body in such an area. Now, as yet, there haven't been any disclosed developments in regard to the Cottingham case where Jeanette's death is concerned. And we know how much these serial killers love the spotlight, don't they? You know, any interviewers, they're like, I'll do it. Any kind of opportunity to kind of have the control just one moment again in their life, it's something that they'll often take. Because when you're in prison, you can't do any of the things that you used to want to do because you're no longer able to actually have the freedom to exercise those fantasies. So you don't have the very thing that ultimately you crave, which is power, domination, control. And if you can create some kind of interest in the way that you've acted and the crimes you carried out and make people essentially interview again, bend and break to whatever you're suggesting they need to bend and break to get more information, then essentially you have that allure again. You have that connection with that sense of desired control. So it could be that. Having said that, I will also note that a lot of our serial killers really don't like claiming bodies that they were not responsible for. And certainly when you think about the other two girls that were found in the New Jersey area a year later, it does make you very suspicious about the potential of this man. And personally, he would seem like a good link. Now, on the 7th of August, 2022, it was a Sunday. This is the 50th anniversary of when Jeanette walked out of her home on Clearview Road for the last time. She'd have been 65. It's hard when you look at the pictures of this beautiful young girl to imagine the life that she would have experienced, the life that was stolen, but she would have been 65. That was the day that she walked out of her Clearview Road home for the last time and walked into the urban legend that she became. Ed Salzanzo, who's actually a former private investigator, he organised a vigil at the church that Jeanette and her family attended. And he actually runs the Justice for Jeanette website, a site dedicated to keeping her memory alive, which is incredible. We're talking about all these years on, and yet this individual wants to have this case solved. He doesn't want that memory to fade. He wants closure. He actually spent years investigating the case with Jeanette's own nephew, John Blancy. And the previous year, he actually unsuccessfully sued the county. We all know, just going to throw it out there, just because somebody unsuccessfully sues a county does not mean the county should have actually won the case. I don't know about you, but I think we can all agree that when you take on a massive organisation, some would say an institution, some would say a majorly powerful source of control, you often don't win, even when you should. Even when, let's say, you went to prison for a crime you didn't commit and you were fitted up, and yet somehow, when it goes to the suit and you should win, you don't. This stuff happens. But he basically sued the county because he wanted Jeanette's clothing. He wanted her fingernail scrapings retested for possible DNA traces using the latest profiling techniques. Why wouldn't they give it him? Like, surely it would be an amazing outcome if you could indeed locate the killer, or you could confirm that the serial killer who suggests he could have done it had actually done it. But unfortunately, he didn't get that information. To this day, Jeanette's case remains open. There've been no new leads, no arrests in half a century. And because of this, her death is still not classified as a homicide. This case is one of those that you just desperately feel frustration over the fact that there has been no closure. Her parents never got closure. Her nephew hasn't got closure. And all these people who keep her name out there, who keep her name alive, so that one day answers may be given. It's unbelievable to me that the police have, I would say, been unhelpful in their own transparency. And I think that with respect, they should without doubt be going out of their way to ensure that if there can be any forensic discoveries made, that they should first and foremost be the leaders in trying to have those mysteries uncovered. Like I said, I'm pretty sure I know what happened to that poor girl. And as ever, our absolute respects go out to those affected by her death and to a life that should have been well lived, a pro-social young girl who should have been able to grow and thrive and become the woman that she was absolutely destined to be. Take care. See you again soon. I hope you found this case interesting. And always remember, be safe, guys.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.